This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. A recent public hearing by Michigan's Marijuana Regulatory Agency drew a lot of comments on a new set of proposed rule changes for licensed cannabis businesses. The rule changes address several things, including a plan that would require license holders to sign a labor peace agreement. These agreements can take several forms. Sometimes they cover the conditions under which employees can organize, or agreeing to use union workers on a certain project. Often they involve restrictions on when and how workers can strike, if employers will agree to certain concessions. Andrew Brisbo is director of Michigan's Marijuana Regulatory Agency. We wanted to talk a little bit more about these proposed rules. Andrew, welcome back to Stateside.
Pleasure to be on with you.
What can you tell us about the proposed new rules, and specifically the provisions that might affect labor?
Well, the new rule set is sort of setting the framework for the regulated industry for the foreseeable future. So in both the medical and adult use markets, we've had various versions of the rules, usually on an emergency basis, based on the amount of time we had to establish the program. So I'm really excited to have a more permanent framework moving forward. And we have 10 rule sets that are topic-based that will apply to both the medical and the adult use markets. What we're really trying to do is set up an environment where businesses can be successful, but we're ensuring consumer protection at the same time. And when it comes to the labor peace agreements, that's one aspect of trying to set up the framework such that these new businesses can be successful. And our concern is with any sort of labor disruption in a very new market, it can be extremely detrimental to the success of the market overall. And the downside to consumers not having proper access through the regulated market currently would be that the illicit market is there to provide access. And we want consumers to use the safest possible model, which is using the regulated market.
Do you know of other examples in which nascent markets have run into labor problems early on and it had a really detrimental effect? What informed, you know, your thinking about this?
Well, I do think that the marijuana industry is sort of unlike anything else. It's very rare that you have a market that pre-exists completely in the black market or the illicit market, and we're trying to then put a regulatory framework around it. So there aren't very many good models to look at. You can go to alcohol, but that was, you know, back in the 1920s where the world was a much different place in terms of what we knew and how it moved forward.
What about some of the other states that have legalized cannabis?
And we did look at that, and there are several states that adopted labor peace agreements or some similar framework. So we did look at that when we determined, you know, how to what the scale should look like in Michigan, exactly what the language should look like. But like I said, it's been illicit in the United States for 90 years and in Michigan, and we're trying to now transition that into this regulated environment.
There was a public hearing on Michigan's marijuana industry rules in Lansing on February 12th last week. That was a pretty well-attended hearing. What were you hearing from people?
I think there were a lot of interesting comments. I think some of the big picture things we heard about labor peace was at the forefront. We heard some detailed commentary from stakeholders within the industry as well. I think a lot of the more detailed feedback will come in written form, which is very helpful to us as well. We need to hear feedback on all the specifics of the rule set. I think labor peace dominated the day. That was kind of the headline issue.
To your knowledge, are any of the current license holders working with staffs who have unionized?
Yeah, I don't know that for sure. I've heard from a number of operators who have made contact with union organizations to talk about the possibility of labor peace agreements and to look at that. I don't know that any staff have officially organized from any particular facilities, but we did get a lot of positive feedback from industry, as well as obviously the workforce within the industry in support of the labor peace agreements. And then we also heard a lot from the other perspective as well.
What will this proposed rule mean for license holders who have already gotten their business off the ground? You've made it clear that anybody moving forward in this industry is going to need to take this into consideration. But what does it mean for the shops that are up and running out there already?
Well, as the rules are drafted now, it would be a requirement for new licensees, but it would also be a requirement at the time of renewal for any existing licensees also to have engaged in a labor peace agreement.
Is there anything that's happened within labor movements for other kind of retail industries in Michigan that have informed your thinking about how this should work out?
I don't think there were any other specific models that dealt with some of the same challenges where the consistency of access was of such critical importance in order to combat the black market. So, you know, it's an interesting intersection of agriculture as well as manufacturing as well as retail when you talk about, you know, the breadth of the marijuana industry. So I think we're trying to look at that industry holistically, not in component parts, And as I said, with some of the issues that arise with this industry specifically, I think it's very tough to draw parallels to other industries. Although when we looked at some of the labor disruptions with GM, the recent history in Michigan and the impacts there, you know, leaves us concerned about how this industry broadly and the businesses in it would survive similar sort of situations and trying ultimately to stay ahead of that.
When we say that cannabis businesses in Michigan really would benefit from having labor peace agreements in place, is that presupposing that organized labor is going to become the trend in cannabis industries?
I think there's definitely an interest in organizing within the industry. You know, whether it becomes the trend is tough to say. I think that, again, trying to stay ahead of the curve to ensure those conversations are happening before the issue forces itself was our goal in the rules.
What were some of the issues developing that you were keeping in mind as the agency was drafting the new proposed rules?
You know, we're trying to take a proactive approach with communicating with the industry on testing standards, for example, you know, new emerging technologies, how the industry is evolving as they are manufacturing less from a sort of a craft capacity, if you will, into bigger, more commercialized manufacturing practices. We have to consider how testing factors into that. So, for example, one of the challenges has been the growth of the testing sector within the marijuana industry. And as, you know, we get more and more commercial operators on the growing and processing side, we don't see that same growth in the testing sector. So we're trying to reduce the overall number of tests while ensuring consumer safety. And we looked at good manufacturing practices as a mechanism to ensure that products are consistent and safe for consumer use. So we want to consider other alternatives when it comes to allowing the market to grow, the industry to grow, without sacrificing consumer safety.
Michigan has a rule in place right now that allows 50% of 30-day-old medical marijuana products to be sold for adult recreational use. Meaning to say, if you have stock on hand and you are licensed for adult recreational use in addition, you can sell the one kind of product to the other kind of customer. Part of this had to do with supply, didn't it?
It did. As we looked at the implementation of the adult use framework, supply takes longer to get to retail operations than it takes to get retail licenses in place. So the consumer demand is already there. Again, we're trying to provide mechanisms for consumers to utilize the safest possible approach to consuming marijuana products, and we think that's through the regulated market. I went and visited a lot of provisioning centers who were struggling to have adequate flower, which is the most in-demand product in the medical market. But at the same time, they had additional products that medical patients weren't purchasing that were sitting on the shelves. And with any of these new businesses, to help their bottom line, if they can move those products over where there is the demand, that's beneficial. So that was something that informed our decision. And then to your point, allowing for the production to start occurring at those manufacturing and growing facilities, that takes more time than it takes for retail licenses. So we thought this was a mechanism that might provide some access, provide an outlet and some additional profitability for those businesses in the short term while the supply starts to be generated in order to meet that consumer demand.
How long do you think it's going to be before Michigan's industry will have enough product to just funnel straight into the recreational market?
Yeah, it's tough to predict that. It's dependent on so many different variables at this point. We certainly see a great deal of interest from those operating in the medical market. We see a lot of additional suppliers coming online in the medical market that we assume will carry over to the adult use market. The biggest limiting factor at this point isn't the number of participating municipalities. So that is in some ways affecting the growth of opportunity for regulated product in the market. But I mean, that takes time. Overnight, when the law passed in 2018, we saw exposure to approximately 3 million additional adult use consumers. That type of supply to meet that demand doesn't happen overnight. So I think it takes a bit of patience, but we see a lot of interest. So we see a lot of good business operators coming into the market in Michigan. We just have to be, it's just going to take a bit of time.
Andrew Brisbow is the director of Michigan's Marijuana Regulatory Agency. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
For a bit more detail on what those who work in the business think of the proposed new rules, we've invited Robin Schneider to join us today. She's the executive director of the Michigan Cannabis Industry Association. Robin, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
So as we've heard, the regulatory agency is proposing new rules to govern the newly formed adult use marijuana market. What was your initial reaction to the proposed new rule?
Well, we were obviously very surprised to find it you know, quietly placed in the rules. And, you know, our association is not one to engage in, you know, some of the political rhetoric we're hearing around this issue. It's become a highly politicized issue, unfortunately, that goes way beyond, you know, the cannabis industry. So we've, you know, tried to be reasonable in how we approach this and oppose it. But the majority of our members do oppose, you know, being forced to sign a legal contract. It's a legally binding contract with a labor union in exchange for a state license. Our members have indicated that they want to be treated equally as every other industry in the state is treated. And I think that's the bulk. The other issue that comes up in my conversations with my members a lot is that if we're being forced to sign this in exchange for a state license, how are we fairly going to negotiate the content of the peace agreement when we're being forced to sign it under duress?
The content of the peace agreement, do you mean the specific details that might pertain to whatever union organization may happen in the future?
Correct. We have been asking to see a written peace agreement so that our members can understand what it is they're going to be forced to sign. We have yet to see any example of what that might be, which you know, makes our members very suspicious and fearful that, you know, a rule is being promulgated that is going to force them to sign something that we've never even seen the language of this contract yet.
You know, critics of the proposed new rule say that this would be a matter for the National Labor Relations Board to referee if indeed it comes up in time. Is that your understanding of what should happen here?
You know, I think it's a violation of both state and federal law. It seems like it might be, you know, in conflict with Michigan's right to work law. And, you know, we are having a hard time understanding why this is necessary or why it's even put in our rules. You know, furthermore, I would say that the MRA, you know, this requirement is way beyond the agency's delegated rulemaking authority. And we did not include, before my role with the Michigan Cannabis Industry Association, I worked on the Prop 1 campaign. I was the finance director. I was also a member of the drafting committee. We did not include this in the language of the ballot initiative. So when our voters voted on this initiative, there was not any language about, you know, forced unionization or signing peace agreements with the labor union. And so this, you know, we think the state is overstepping its bounds.
Well, to be fair, though, what they're proposing is not a forced unionization. It's suggesting that businesses not stand in the way if their workers do choose to organize, right?
So that should be between a worker and the union to make that decision. But the bottom line is, until we don't have even a draft of what this contract with the union says, are they going to require our members to, you know, convene meetings with them? Are they going to require our members to hand over the cell phone numbers of each of their employees? All of that is a big unknown, which is why we think it's quite a stretch. And I think that some would argue that it could be forced unionization.
Are there any businesses in Michigan right now, to your knowledge, that have unionized?
Not yet, but we do have some members, especially on the retail side, who have expressed that they're interested in, you know, their members are employees are interested in the potential of unionizing, and, you know, that they are very open as employers to help foster that relationship between the unions and their workers. So even in those cases, they don't want to be forced to have to sign this contract in order to get a state license.
There was a public hearing on the proposed rules in Lansing on Tuesday, mm-hmm. February 12th. Were you there?
I was. I testified.
It was very well attended, wasn't it?
It was.
Do you foresee that the agency is going to have to put the brakes on because of this, because of the intense outcry from the industry?
You know, we can hypothesize on what's going to happen, but I do not believe that the JCAR committee that is majority Republican will be approving this. In fact, they've already passed a resolution stating they oppose it. So at this point, we're just waiting to see how the department handles it moving forward. But we've stated our objection. You know, we remain optimistic that there will be, you know, a way to proceed forward with our rule set. But this has unfortunately become a very politically contentious issue. And it's disappointing to us. You know, it's just a disappointment when that happens.
Do you know if any other states have instituted agreements like this for their cannabis industries?
There's been some in California, is my understanding.
And how have those worked out?
I have heard that some of those have been pretty extreme in their language. And, you know, I've heard from some companies that, you know, there were scenarios where the unions, you know, came in and organized and promised, you know, $20 an hour minimum jobs and 401ks, and they ended up in a really bad situation where they, you know, they weren't able to negotiate the terms of the contract. And so, you know, yeah, I think that our members are concerned about some of those scenarios. And we want to make sure, I mean, the cannabis industry offers a very good, high-paying jobs. And, you know, we don't want to end up in a situation where our workers are being promised more than what this industry is capable of giving them.
The growers, I know, require highly skilled people for some of their work. It's really to their advantage.
Absolutely.
To have some people who've mm-hmm. maybe had some experience in other states or mm-hmm. and who understand the regulatory climate that they might be dealing with. Is the same true for trying to attract managers or bud tenders?
Oh, absolutely. But I will tell you that there are some colleges in Michigan starting to actually offer courses in, you know, cannabis chemistry and botany. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of great training happening in-state as well. And, you know, a lot of people in Michigan obtaining high-paying jobs in our industry right now.
Why wouldn't something like a labor peace agreement increase potential employees' confidence that Michigan would be a good place for them to work?
Well, I think that if the workers want to unionize, I think that that's a decision that they need to make on their own. I don't think it's appropriate for the government to tell a business owner that they have to sign a legally binding contract with a third party in order to get a license. It's very transactional, and it's overstepping government bounds.
Robin Schneider with the Michigan Cannabis Industry Association. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.